I'm Kyle Devitt, senior analyst at Inside the Cross, and today I'm joined by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside the Cross freelance contributor and pro lacrosse analyst.
Oh man, what a week! What a week, right? What are we doing? This was fun. We had a fun week.
We did. We had a great week.
Yeah. Two lacrosse tournaments are happening. We covered PLL in the previous podcast on the Inside the Cross feed for the Pro Lacrosse podcast. This is the podcast for Major League Lacrosse's. They're calling it a season because I think they don't want to call it a tournament because someone else is calling something a tournament. Is that fair?
Yeah, I feel like it kind of, I don't want to say cheapens it, but I feel like even if you play for a couple of days, they still want to maintain the legitimacy soundingness of a season.
Yeah, but it's good try. Good try. Good effort. Fair enough. Let's roll back, though, because we have to talk about all of the things that have happened with the MLL in the offseason. First off, we got some uniforms a couple weeks ago. They look exactly like the old uniforms. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so for better or worse, they announced them June 22nd, which isn't technically that long ago, but like now in the days in which we currently reside, June 22nd feels like it's a year. Like there have been so many things that happen any given week in the world right now. That's just so far in the past. I would bet most people don't even remember like how the uniforms changed compared to last year's uniforms, or even if they changed. And like, yeah, I know the name of the game right now is to stay relevant in this whole, you know, wasteland of sports with nothing going on. But in hindsight, I think they should have held on to, you know, unveiling the new uniforms until after they announced the tournament or the season. You know, they just step up and say, hey, look, here's the tournament, here's what's going on, and here's what they're going to be wearing. You know, like kind of drop that at the end or a couple days later when the dust settles from the big announcement. I don't really see the benefit to going the other way with it.
But they're so light. You can wear them in space.
That's sorry. That's true. Sorry. They were inspired by NASA. That is true.
When I read that in the copy, I was like, all I could picture is like people wearing MLL uniforms in space over spacesuits. And I thought it was just a funny image. I will say, at least the Connecticut launch, I'm sorry, I'm seeing a correction here in my notes. The Connecticut Hammerheads have jersey numbers that I'll be able to read instead of the launch, who had yellow on white numbers with blue outlines that were impossible to read on any resolution TV. Chris, I don't understand why they're called the Hammerheads when they look exactly like the launch now. Like, I don't think there's ever been a Hammerhead shark in the state of Connecticut. Can you recall that?
If there has been, I do not know. I have not heard any stories about Hammerhead sharks swimming through Connecticut. But I don't know anything about Connecticut other than the fact that it is north of me. That said, so teams usually keep the aquatic stuff like where it makes sense, you know, like Tampa Bay Rays, Miami Dolphins, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, San Jose Sharks, you know, things like that. But to be fair, you know, like Lions and Tigers don't really live in Detroit. So, you know, I guess there aren't hard and fast rules on that sort of thing. So maybe Connecticut's kind of trying to smash the monopoly, move into that corner, and they're kind of starting to get, you know, kind of move in on the whole water things element when it comes to naming their team. I doubt that. But if they are doing that, I respect it. And I mean, if there's a Utah Jazz, I guess there's no real hard and fast rules to that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think there's some history with that being a team from Louisiana that moved and whatnot. But I think, you know, one of the things that is, well, first of all, Connecticut is a state of traitors because half the state loves New England teams and the other half loves New York teams. And they raise their children to like pick different teams. And it's really confusing as a sports like place in general. Like, I'm taking shots at Connecticut a little bit here, but like, I think everyone that is from there understands what I'm saying. Regardless of me being a New England fan, like, I get it. I'm from New Hampshire. I might as well be Canadian. But you guys are picking weird teams and you're making your children confused. I think I'm going to choose to not respect the Hammerhead thing and make fun of it for as long as possible. But if you think about it, that is how I show my respect, by mercilessly roasting things. And speaking of roasting things, a bunch of MLL players made the jump to the PLL this offseason, but one stayed, and his name is Lyle Thompson. How does that impact the league in your eyes?
Well, so that's a good question. I would say, as far as league operations go, Rob Pinnell, of everybody who left, Rob Pinnell is the only departure that really matters. And that's not taking away from any of the other players talent-wise, because there are obviously some very talented players who switched leagues this offseason.
Right.
You know, we've given them plenty of time. We've discussed them. But as far as, like, actual, you know, PR, money-making, drawing eyes, I think it's just Rob Pinnell and then it's everybody else. You know what I mean? Like, people leave leagues all the time, and the leagues just keep it moving. I talked to a GM before the season started, and before the draft and all that sort of offseason stuff started. And I was like, hey, are you approaching things differently now, you know, than you would have in years past, now that you know that there's a PLL, you know, you're thinking about, you know, adjusting your drafts and this and that, and, you know, trying to change up your strategy? And he was like, no, not at all, because, you know, people get jobs and they leave the area. People go to law school and they leave the area. Like, the league, it's just, as long as you're going to have, like, a league, any sort of lacrosse that isn't a full-time job, you're going to have people who just up and disappear, and you just kind of have to stay flexible in that regard. So unless you're bringing a ton to the table off-field stuff like Pinnell, it doesn't really matter, I don't think. You know, he had the branding and the promotion and all of that sort of, you know, off-field stuff that he does that's, you know, it's getting to be more popular, but he's still kind of leading the way in that regard. And, you know, he's been a star since college. His departure is a big loss. A lot of people are paying attention to him. I don't think other people are really paying attention to people like that. You know, like, you don't really go to Instagram and see a lot of stories about the other guys who left and things like that, unless you're looking specifically for them. As far as the MLL goes, I think now they need to find, like, some other guys who are interested in stepping up and promoting themselves. You know, there's so much that the league can do, but it's really something that the players want to do. They want to market themselves. They're going to have to want to do that kind of thing. And if they have players who do want to kind of step in as well, then the league can help them succeed in doing it. And then they also need to do everything possible to get Lyle to stick around. They've got him, you know, 2021, but then it gets really interesting. I think he is probably the most universally liked lacrosse player on the planet. So, I mean, I think so. There's also some very heavily universally liked players. You know, you don't hear much bad about Kyle Harrison, or I've never heard anybody like trashing Tom Schreiber or something like that. But I think if I had to rank him for some reason, I'd toss Lyle at the top of the pile. And I think his next deal is going to be huge for the league that gets him to sign it.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the stories, is the MLL signed him kind of unexpectedly. And I actually had some people ask me, you know, off record, on record, like, is that the same deal that they announced kind of last year? And the answer is no. Like, he did sign a new deal with the MLL. And that new deal, this shouldn't surprise you, allows him to wear Nike stuff. So that's great. And I, you know, I'm probably not supposed to say that on the podcast, but I don't care. I think the weird part of it is, in the madness of social media and league like allegiances, like, Lyle Thompson has become underrated. Like, how is that possible if you've seen him play? It's only people that haven't seen him play, right? Like, there's no way that you could underrate him in my eyes.
Right. I agree. I think if you are tasked with rating people, you know what I mean? Like if we had to turn in an article rating players, I don't think we would underrate him. I think he can be underrated by people who aren't really paying attention to the venues in which he shines. I mean, if he's on the field, he's probably the best player on that field.
He's the best player on the field.
Just regardless, you know, if he's indoor, outdoor, wherever he is. I don't know how long you can hold this title if it's a 1 year thing and then you have to reapply for it. But any given year, he might be the best lacrosse player on the planet. I know we kind of, you know, I know the best in the world tag came up a few years ago and we threw it on Tom Schreiber. But any given year, I mean, you know, Tom Schreiber was kind of hurt, obviously, you know, part of last year and spilling into his box season. So, I mean, is Lyle the best player in the world right now? He certainly might be. You know, again, if it's an injury that knocks Schreiber down or whatever, and even still, you know, Lyle's just dominant indoors and outdoors. He demonstrated that getting a full MLL season, which was another thing that, you know, as far as you're talking about being underrated, if you didn't watch the MLL last year, but you watched it, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago, you probably saw Lyle Thompson play, what, like 4 games or something like that? And, yeah. You know, you say, oh, he's good, but obviously he's not, you know, in the scoring race. He's not in the MVP, you know, conversation or anything like that. But, you know, give him a full season and he just steamrolled everybody. And same thing in the indoor game. So, yeah, I mean, he's just a monster. I think the thing that hurts him in the regard, like you mentioned, is social media. And he's not that guy, which is also a thing I think helps him personally. You know, I would not really guess he cares that much if, like, you know, 50 dudes on Instagram think that, you know, he's not top 10. You know, I don't see him losing sleep over that kind of thing. He just kind of vibes differently than a lot of players his age. He's just kind of got different priorities in his life. You know, he'll do, you know, maybe like you said, like Nike, you know, maybe he'll get on a poster, do a commercial or something like that, but we're probably not going to see him like on a candy bar or something like that. He just kind of vibes differently than a lot of the other players in the league. So, or just kind of in the world of pro lacrosse. So I think he's probably okay with wherever, you know, people do decide to rank him, because, you know, he knows what he can do.
It's infuriating. Like, because you're so right. Because there are, like, a ton of dude bros that are, like, liking highlights of guys that are, by the way, talented players. I'm never going to throw out a name. But they're liking highlights of guys that have played pro lacrosse for, like, 2 years. And they're like, this is the best player in the world. And I'm like, no, he's not. He's flashy and he scores diving goals and the highlight cuts are incredible. He's not better than Lyle Thompson. Stop it. Like, I feel like if you and I have a role in this world, it is to remind people of who is actually good and not who is good at social media. That is like my life goal for pro lacrosse. Like, I want you to know who is actually good. I really do. And there are so many talented players, and it's not a measure of ranking. It's a measure of impact, right? And Lyle is so impactful in so many ways. But I think the question you have to ask yourself, aside from him, is who else should the MLL look to push? Because they did lose, like you said, they lost Pinnell, they lost Courier, they lost a lot of really talented players that were also not just like older talented players, but like younger talented players to the POL. Who should they kind of focus their efforts on? Because obviously, like, Junior is probably the next player that comes to mind. But for me, I think it's Cole and Stats at Boston. Like, that has to be like the number one story in the league, right? Like, who else would you push? Like, Brian Cole and Randy Stats playing in Boston is like going to change a lot of things for Boston fans, who have been wildly trod upon by not teams and very poor fourth quarters and second halves of games, especially in the last two seasons. Do you have any other guys that kind of stand out for you that you would kind of, you know, throw your hat in for?
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely, to echo what you just said, there have been times, you know, in the past, you know, past year or two where I've lost my mind thinking about Randy Stotts being underrated by people, you know?
Yes. Yes.
But for whatever reason, just really gets her like, you son of a, Randy Stotts would steamroll that guy. And, but yeah, no, yes, yeah, so I definitely hear you on that. Speaking of steamrolling guys, Dylan Malloy, I think is, he had that highlight last year, that I think carried him quite a long way and is somebody, you know, we saw him when he was, you know, coming out of Brown. I think he has a lot of things that people look for as far as, you know, marketing a league after and things like that. So I think he's somebody who they could really kind of run with. If he's interested in doing that, you know, I don't know how busy he is off field, but I think Dylan Malloy could do something like that. I think Mark Matthews' skill set translates to something that people could really kind of be galvanized by. He, you know, any given day, he'll throw some sort of, you know, crazy swim move or toe drag or something that is really custom made for the kinds of, you know, 30-second little clips or something like that, or something you want to get out there and put that on an Instagram story or something like that. He has the game that kind of just draws a lot of traffic as well. Obviously, Junior is in the same sort of vein, but yeah, he is good as gone very soon. So, you know, milk him for all it's worth in the next, you know, month
enjoy,
or two.
Enjoy it, right? Like, I listen to a lot of, like, soccer podcasts, and everyone keeps talking about how, like, Ronaldo and Messi are, like, people have, like, forgotten about them, and they're, like, wasted in this kind of, like, pandemic shortened season, and how it's such a shame. And it's like, John Grant Jr. is, like, in that conversation with guys like that in a different sport. And if you don't appreciate what he's doing, like, listen, he's, like, I'm closer to him in age than a lot of these other players, and I can't believe he can walk. I can't. Like, I don't understand it. Like, he's just incredible, and you have to give him everything you can. And if this is his last season, like, I hope that he can win a championship. I am glad he's playing one more time. And you know, we should say he also is now the assistant coach at Hopkins with Pete Milliman, which is also super exciting, because that means he's going to – maybe we don't get to see him play anymore, but, like, he's going to be in, like, our lives as lacrosse fans as a coach. More so, like, it's not that he wasn't at the Air Force Academy, but job at Hopkins is very high profile, even if it's as an assistant. So I would agree there. I think – but if you're looking for somebody on that team, I think it's, like, Mikey Schlosser and Ryan Lee are guys that I would look at. I think there's – listen, there's guys on every team. That's the thing, like – this is going to be a big test for the MLL's, like, PR department, and also for, like, their social media, because they've been getting dunked on by PLL for the entire existence of PLL. Like, PLL is way better at social media. Like, I don't think anyone at MLL is going to tell you that's not true, if they're telling you the truth. They'll say that they're not, but they are. Numbers don't lie. So I think that them going first, though, with their tournament happening the week before and having a slight overlap, you know, I think is an advantage. It's an opportunity. At the very least, it's an opportunity. At the very best, it's an advantage. I don't think it's a great advantage, but it's an advantage nonetheless. And I think that there's an opportunity to grow out of that, even if it's only a week long and then, like, people say bye-bye and go watch PLL. Like, you can watch both and have a great time. And if MLL kind of, like, makes that the focus of their message, that's going to go a long way. Let's kind of shift gears again. What did you make of the super, by the way, super fun 2020 MLL Collegiate Draft? What were your impressions?
Yeah, the MLL Draft, thumbs all the way up on that, man. So first of all, lacrosse Twitter made it one of the most entertaining lacrosse events in a long, long while. It was just a blast. It was a blast. It was like a party. Just got to hang out, people chiming in and making jokes, and it was just a great atmosphere that you don't get. You know, you don't get it all the time on social media, especially lacrosse social media, any sort of sports media. There's so much negativity. It was so much fun. And as far as the MLL themselves, I think they did a better job making sure that, like, schools were involved, you know, in promoting their picks than in years past. somebody would get drafted, and then, you know, a minute later, you know, whoever it was, UVA or Penn or whoever, they've got their graphic up already, congratulating the guy, saying where he's going. I assume that MLL kind of stepped up a little bit more, trying to get involved with the colleges in that respect. And, you know, if they did, then it's certainly something that showed. I thought it went much better than in years past. Just seemed like a bigger deal for the schools. I think as far as the league goes, also, I think the biggest accomplishment was the percentage of players they were able to sign. You had Grant Ament, and you had Brian Costabile, who kind of declared for the PLL, which isn't something we'd seen, I guess, last year. But, you know, they kind of just came out and said, I'll be playing in the PLL. And I think that helped, you know, as far as keeping the average, you know, as far as getting the players and actually signing them. But even, you know, you throw those guys out of the equation, I think they still snagged like 8 of their first 10 picks. You know, they had T.D. Erland going first, but then I think, you know, 8 of their next 9, they could actually grab those guys and retain. And as a league going first, I feel like they kind of, you know, you can obviously ask, you can interview the players and their coaches and figure out what their, you know, aspirations are, but it's still, you're still kind of sticking your neck out there a little bit, especially going first. So I thought they can really view that whole situation as nothing but a win for the league. And, you know, I think kind of Michael Krause was the big kind of pick who, you know, when the PLL draft came, felt like an even bigger snag for the MLL to get him and sign him with the Hammerheads. But, you know, as big that pick was, you had to remember, like, Alex Woodall and Zach Goodrich, they were top 5 picks in both leagues last year, too. So, and those guys ended up going to the MLL, not the PLL. So I think even, you know, as great a debut as the PLL had, I think if the MLL team, the organizations, if they don't draft scared, you know, and if they still bring enough to the table, if they, you know, present themselves in a great, convincing manner, they can still clearly get some talented players.
As you have said many times, scared money does not make money. Right. Yeah. And I got to say, I also love the draft. I remember it falling on a, like, really awful day in terms of the news cycle. And I was really low from that. And I was struggling to get the energy to cover the draft. But then, like, the picks started to roll in. And it just, it went so well. I mean, if you think about how, like, you expected it to go, right? If the hype for it was not necessarily there. And hype for stuff doesn't always live up to its expectation. That's why it's called hype. But before I knew it, like, tweets were firing from all angles. I found myself for the first time wanting even more rounds when it was over, which I never, ever thought I would say. Now, is that a reaction that's down to the circumstance and the timing? I think part of that is. But the other part that was great was the way they announced the picks with old school players and short video segments. I love that. I wanted more of it. The thing that the MLL is so bad at is acknowledging their rich history of guys. And to include guys like Doc and Casey Powell was just so – it was so impactful to see. Now, all they have to do is create a professional lacrosse Hall of Fame, find a way to keep all the great PLL players out because pettiness is next to godliness in pro lacrosse. That's a joke. Settle down. When the MLL announced their tournament this week, what did you do the thing that happened when the PLL announced and panic like immediately? Because I did.
So why did you what was, you know, walk me through that. What was the panic?
The panic was, oh, my God, they're going to do all these games in a week. How am I going to watch all these games?
Oh, yes.
that was the that's the straight up panic. Like, and PLL is a little more spread out, but MLL is not spread out at all. And my whole thing and your whole thing, too, is like we watch every game. It is a grueling task in a regular season, but we also can prepare all week for that 3-day, maybe sometimes 4-day kind of window where we watch one or two games. Now 3 or 4 every day for like 3 or 4 days. This thing is going to kick off and Chris and I are going to be like strapped in to a couch watching games nonstop. Like, I don't know how I'm going to write. I don't know how we're going to do the podcast. We're going to do the podcast at like 7 a.m. or something. Like, how are we going to do that? Chris has another job. Like, what? Like, my whole thing was like, how do we maximize the output for this and the output for PLO at the same time? Because there is going to be a tiny overlap, and I'm okay with that. Like, I'm not picking on that, and I get why there is. Clearly, I get why there is, but I just went kind of like just straight panic, and I don't have an answer for anything I just said. So if you have answers, I would like to hear them. I'm sure the audience would as well.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a really good series of questions to which, unfortunately, I don't have answers. I kind of went through, yeah, equal parts worry and also excitement. Like, every year I try to do something a little bit different, right? Like, you just, the way these seasons go is, you know, they go throughout the whole summer. And, you know, if you've got, you know, this, you know, a weekly column that you've been, you know, looking at things through one angle, that's cool. But, you know, generally the next year I kind of think, all right, well, I did that this way, you know, let me try to do something different this way, you know. And so that kind of has just kind of generically, organically happened over the years. But this is like a bonus level that we have never seen. You know, it's not just watch the games on the weekend, like you said, and then, you know, we'll do the podcast this night, and then, you know, maybe we'll have an article, you know, something in writing that night. This is just like all summer, nothing. You know, we're going to have nothing in May, yeah. Nothing in July and June, and then it's just going to be like one day we're all just going to like get up and go storming into battle. And we're just not coming home for like 6 weeks or something.
I'm scared, man. I'm scared. Are you scared?
I am. I'm a little scared. I don't know how we're going to do it. I don't know what we're going to do. I really don't know. Like you said, are we doing like a 7 a.m. Podcast? Are we doing something live? Are we writing really short things? And then I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know what we're going to like physically be able to do, and I don't know what people are going to want or expect either, you know? Like, yeah. What's the daily correspondence? Like, like we're overseas or something? I really don't
daily
know.
Daily podcast? Yeah, that's fun.
Maybe. Who knows?
That's wild. I think we should also mention that, like, Chris and I are not going to these either tournament, either season tournament. Like, that's not going to happen. And I think it's weird that, like, people thought that we were going. I mean, I don't know if they want us to go.
Right. I don't think anybody's going to miss us.
Yeah, I don't think they had like sometimes when Chris and I go to games, like regardless of college or pro, they'll like print out a little like our name with like, you know, the logo of the team, and they'll like kind of like tape it down to like where we're supposed to sit. You don't think that was happening this time around, which is fine. Like, it's fine. And to be clear, like the risk for, you know, and I mentioned this on the last pod, like I've seen what like COVID can do to a person, like with my eyes in front of me, it's real. Wear a mask, please wear a mask still. It's terrifying. It's a terrifying thing. And, you know, I think that's why this kind of season tournament thing was delayed for so long. Like it has everything to do with COVID-19, you know, has a little bit to do with choosing Navy to host the tournament, but mostly the precautions. Like I had a call last week with the MLL league office that actually didn't end with either of us screaming at each other, which I took as a good sign. But this tournament was like totally supposed to be announced a month ago, but a lot has happened across the country in a month, especially how it relates to how places have dealt with the pandemic and, you know, certain places dealing with it better than others. I'm lucky enough to be in New Hampshire where the real toll that it took, and it still took a toll here. Like, don't get me wrong. It really got into the nursing homes, and the death rate here, like percentage wise, is very high. Very, very high. Very insidious. So I say that, but I'm also glad that the tournament's happening at all. Like, I'm very concerned about something going wrong because it will. Like, all of these tournaments, they keep saying, like, here are our precautions, here are what we're doing. If. It's not going to be if. It's going to be when. And you can say that's, like, a very cynical view, but you can't afford not to think like that when you put together an event like this. And I hope that the plans are in place to handle that circumstance, and those plans are more than sufficient. And I have to say, I have no reason to suspect that they aren't sufficient. I think that they absolutely are. You know, MLL is working with a local hospital in Annapolis. They're, all the players are staying in a single location. But other than that, what were your other thoughts on how the kind of announcement, like, kind of was going to happen and then didn't and then finally did this week?
Well, I mean, I kind of understood that, you know, the kind of hesitance to make the formal announcement, and kind of, it was kind of a start and stop sort of thing. Like, you know, oh, maybe it's coming this day, maybe it's not. And then, you know, nothing would happen. Then they'd say, oh, it's coming soon. I was never like mad at them for that. I mean, this is so difficult, you know, and, you know, they have to get the venue, you know, everything in agreement, and then you've got to house everybody, and that's got to be everything airtight in all these places. And like you said, this is all just like minimizing risk to the best of your ability. It's not eliminating the risk. And I mean, this whole situation is something that we haven't dealt with, you know, in our lifetimes, and none of these people have. So as much as I was dying to know the specifics of this, you know, not only as a fan, but, you know, as somebody who's going to have to, you know, work concerning this event, I understood why it took so long to get it out. I do like this, though. Yesterday, well, we're recording this the day that the announcement came out. The day before, they put out this little thing, 30 seconds on Twitter or something like that. That was this tiny little mini video that just showed some, just like a little montage of all these tweets asking about the tournament. And then they were like, you know, tomorrow or something like that. And I have to say I liked that, because it was a sign to me that the MLL was trying something. Because, yeah, I know in the past, like, they've done a lot of things that are just like links to articles, you know, or something like that. And that doesn't really cook on Twitter. You know, it looks very sort of template based, and it doesn't really get things moving. The fact just that, you know, it wasn't like a multi-million dollar campaign or anything like that, but I looked at that little video and I was like, okay, they're trying some sort of strategy. And, you know, if they can kind of tweak their social media work a little bit more, I think it's going to go a long way. You mentioned earlier kind of how they have this window that's their own for a week. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there, especially, you know, I don't think we mentioned this yet, on ESPN's family of networks, which is huge for them. Get the games on ESPN. They've got them at Navy, which is a nice looking place. If they can pull this off, I think they have a tremendous opportunity. Obviously, hopefully nothing goes wrong or catastrophically wrong or anything like that. But I think they have a major opportunity, and the players have a major opportunity to really do some great things here. As far as the tournament itself, it's, you know, it's a little bit short. It's like a week or whatever. But honestly, I'm going to argue that that's a great thing. I love that the tournament is short. As a fan, I would like a lot of lacrosse and all that. But you know what? Get in, play your lacrosse, and get out. We have nothing guaranteed right now. You know what I mean? Like, the longer you stick around, the longer chances are something bad happens. Play the tournament, and we'll all have a good time watching it, and then, you know, crown your winner, and then let's get out and start over for next season.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to Inside the Cross editor-in-chief Matt Kinnear about it, and he's like, you know, I think I prefer, you know, pro lacrosse like this. You know, like, not taking up, like, the whole summer. And I'm like, this is my nightmare. What are you talking about? I get his point, though. You know what I mean? Like, I get that, you know, for like summer's traditionally not this summer, but traditionally a very busy time for recruiting and events and things of that nature that are huge moneymakers in lacrosse for, you know, across tons of age groups, and it's an essential part of the lacrosse season, even though it doesn't take place during the lacrosse season, right? And a lot of people have been kind of against pro lacrosse because it bumps up against that. And it does. Like, it absolutely does. And I've always gotten that viewpoint. Like, people say that to me all the time. I'm like, you're right. I agree that these things rub against each other in a way that you do sometimes have to make the choice of one over the other. My choice is clear. So is yours. You know, and I understand people making that choice and not supporting it, but like choosing something that's more appropriate to their station at the moment. Like, I understand that. But I also think, you know, like I said, it's a crazy mix and it's still risky. And I'm glad it's only a week because it minimizes the risk. That's to me, that's like, forget like my workflow or your workflow or what we're going to do. And the panic that sets in from that. I think that's important. It's a great point that you make that I just want to echo. That being said, Chris, who is the title favorite and why is it the Boston Cannons?
So that's a very good question. Yeah, good for Boston. They're really coming in strong to this thing. And, you know, while we are talking about that, like, I know they gave us some draft picks, but how did they get Randy Stotts and Brian Cole in exchange for essentially PT Ritchie?
I'm not going to say, like, it's a fair trade, if that's what you're trying to get me to say. It's not as bad as the infamous Will Manny for a bag of balls trade.
Right.
But it's close. But I also think there's other factors that came in with Stats and Cole are represented by the same agency and kind of we're looking for a change. And listen, the Blaze were a mess last year. That team had so much talent and should have won. And I've said this before and people are like, no, what are you talking about? Watch that team play offense and transition and tell me they shouldn't have won something. They won nothing, and I couldn't believe it. But I think there was a lot of internal strife there, and this was this trade was indicative of that, if that's as far as I'm willing to say. I know other stuff, but I can't say other stuff. So that's as far as I'm going to say about that trade. But listen, looking at it on the surface, it makes no sense. I agree, 100%.
Yeah, and I think we do kind of get that. I don't think pro lacrosse is at a point yet where we have been able to outgrow crazy trades. You know, like,
no,
we're still at a point where you kind of have to look out for the players a little bit more, you know, cause they can walk away a lot more easily, I think, yeah, than, you know, like a, you know, like an NFL quarterback or something like that. They kind of have a lot more kind of in their foundation, keeping them around in the game. A lot of these guys are like, "Yeah, I'll go to Canada and I'll just, you know, play MSL and play NLL and you'll never see me again." And we don't want that. So, you know, do what you got to do to keep these guys, you know, comfortable and happy and then have them coming out and performing. So yeah, we do occasionally like, you know, I think the Manny one is kind of the undisputed champion of the sort of thing where you can look back and you're just looking at it on paper, just like squinting, like, wait a second. And you did what?
But it's the only time I swore on the podcast. It's the only time.
Yeah, it was well-deserved. Well-deserved reaction to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that happens. And I think we just kind of, you know, we don't really jump on the leagues as much. Just, I should say, like, lacrosse media in general, we don't jump on the leagues as much for their trades as, you know, other sports do. And I think we do kind of approach it with a little bit of an understanding. I mean, obviously some still happen where we're like, boy, that's stupid. How does that, how do you rationalize that?
Right.
But I do think generally we give them a little more slack, if I can, pat us on the back for that. As far as your actual question, I'm going to pick another championship favorite, and I am going to pick a repeat back-to-back champion, the Chesapeake Bayhawks. Your home team, Bayhawks, win it on their own home field. I think they've got one notable loss in Jesse Bernhardt, and can't, you know, diminish that. He's an excellent player, but still, one loss there. I think they picked up some guys who could be very good, very key contributors. Like, Callan Crawford is coming off of a tremendous, tremendous indoor season, where he had serious MVP talk. You know, there was, when he did not win it, Shane Jackson actually won it. But, you know, I know when that was announced, there were some people who were like, how did that not go to Callan Crawford? So he's kind of coming in with a lot of momentum. Hopefully hasn't died down too much during this, you know, this surprise off period we've had. But I think if you can bring Callan Crawford into a team that has kind of started leaning into this sort of, how do you put it, like outdoor, indoor, hybrid offense kind of thing. Like, they've got a bunch of guys, a lot of strong lefties, especially running with the Bayhawks now. You've got, you know, obviously Lyle Thompson. I thought he worked well with Brendan Bomberry. They go way, way back. They kind of set up an offense that's heavy lefty. Nick Mariano jumps in up top. Same sort of situation with him. If you can bring somebody like Callan Crawford in who knows the indoor game and you know that they're running that kind of system, I think he could be very strong. I'm excited to see what he does. If he hops in, helps a little bit, they can kind of smooth over the defensive loss. I think the king stays the king.
I'm going to let you guys in on a little kind of inside baseball here. Chris and I, before the podcast started, we were looking at rosters that we definitely don't have, potential rosters, let's say. And we were picking out guys on each team that we could not, we don't know who they are. And I will say that the Bayhawks have the least amount of guys that Chris and I don't know who they are. So it's a good pick. It's a good pick. And I'm not going to do names, but we actually were going to record it and put it at the end as a stinger and just be like, who is this? Who is this? We decided against it. We thought it'd be funny, but it also probably sounds mean, especially if like you're that person that we say. So we're not going to do that. I don't want to get Cannon's fans too excited, but I did speak to a key member of their team this morning. And let me just tell you, the hopes are high. I cannot remember the last time I talked to a Cannons player that was as pumped about the roster in maybe like 8 years. I don't think, and that's not an exaggeration, that's a fact. Like, the absolute belief is there. It's there. And I haven't seen it since they won a championship in 2011 at all. I have not seen it there. So, Cannons fans, get excited. Watch your team. They're going to look good. They've got a lot of great pieces, and we're going to go into that a little bit more in the next topic. But I wanted to ask you kind of a follow-up to this. I've seen a lot of chatter amongst NBA players that their upcoming tournament will be the hardest tournament to win because of the short rest and a compressed schedule. Do you think that same logic applies to the MLL? Do you think that kind of like formula checks out?
Yeah, I definitely think it does apply. You know, you're going into a situation also, like I kind of mentioned, was talking about Callan Crawford. You're going into this situation where some of these guys, who knows what they've been doing? You know, you have to hope they stayed in shape. But was there a bit of a trail off because they haven't been actually playing in games? You know, even if you're like, you know, lifting weights and running and stuff like that, it's obviously a little bit different than actual game experience. So these guys are getting into a situation where they're going to have to rely on what they've been doing by themselves, and then they're going to have to bring it in. They get like 2 days of training, and then it's just something that they're not used to doing, you know. And it's just, you know, you have a game, and then you're going to have, like you said, short rest, and then you're going to have to do it all over again. And if you slip up, there's very little room for error. You know what I mean? It's not like one of those situations where, you know, like a regular season, you can start off and drop 4 games or 5 games and still battle back. You know, especially like leagues of these size, we've seen it in recent years past. You know, a team will get to 500 and they'll still find their way into the playoffs or something like that. If you start off and you're just getting stomped by everybody, you know, your whole tournament's going to be over before it gets started. So, yeah, it's going to be different. I think these championships are going to feel different, but I definitely see how someone can say this is going to be an incredibly difficult one to win. What do you think? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I absolutely think that the difficulty level is very high because you're not just competing against teams. You're competing against, you know, time. And that is and recovery. And that's no joke. That's a very real thing. We're also like, they're playing this at the end of June in Annapolis. I'm pretty sure it's going to be hot there. You know, like they better have water breaks. Like they better have like a lot of things out. They need like those misting fans on the sidelines to like keep everybody cool because it's going to be 100 degrees more often than it's not. And that's just another level of difficulty, and I just wanted to like mention that above the top because that's the thing that if you were playing in a tournament, that's probably the thing you're most concerned about, right? Other than the COVID, but I think that's kind of where my mind kind of floats as another concern. Who is one MLL player that no one is talking about that we think is absolutely going to blow up?
Like, I remember thinking ahead of time that I was very curious in seeing what Frank Krug was going to be able to do. Now, is he on the roster? I don't think so. So I'm going to go ahead and say, I guess I'll have to wait until 2021.
My pick isn't on the roster either, and I have a giant thing. Like, we're full disclosure, folks. Like, we both picked guys and didn't look at the roster, and then we looked at the rosters and went, why aren't our guys on the rosters?
Yeah.
We got to pick you guys. So
I've got a number two, so I can just, Frank, I look forward to seeing what you can do next season.
You pick another Frank, our friend.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. So I'll say shout out, of course, to Frank Brown, the legend, podcast legend, Frank Brown.
Yes.
We have seen him dominate very short spans of time. And so I think that will be exciting. I don't think I think he certainly qualifies. I don't think a lot of people are talking about Frank Brown, but it would be great to see him absolutely blow up again. Another person who I don't think people are talking about that much, who I think certainly has the possibility of blowing up, especially in his situation, is Daniel Beccaro. I've been buying his stock for a little while. Georgetown guy, strong lefty playing with the Outlaws right now. He didn't play last season, but he is apparently ready to go this year. I think he was kind of known for in college. He had this big game. He lit Yale up for 8 goals. The postseason just kind of dominated his matchup there. You can go to YouTube if you don't know what I'm talking about and just type in his name, and they will tell you he is going against Chris Fake, and it went very well for him. I got to see him personally play in D.C. against Villanova, and it's just one of the best, you know, in-person performances I can remember seeing in a very long time. I remember, you know, I knew who he was before that game, but I remember afterwards just kind of being like, oh, okay. All right, this dude's a monster. It's one of those kind of, you know, you let him get hot and he starts taking the thing over. And so I think Denver is really going to appreciate having him contribute. I think, you know, he's certainly going to, like I said, he's going to have a lot of opportunities there. Strong lefty. I was wondering how he would kind of be able to fit in that spot with John Grant Jr. They kind of occupy some of the similar spacing. But that being said, a tournament like this, you know, there might be, three quarters where Jr.'s sitting out or, you know, picking some spots or something like that. And, you know, Beccaro, like I said, he hasn't played pro at all. So his legs are fresh. Get him in there a little bit as well. So I think there's a role for him, and I think that he will do quite well.
I can't believe you didn't pick your boy, Dan Lomas.
Well, I was thinking about him. I thought once I did Frank Brown, I was like, all right, I'll leave Lomas just in case. But yeah, Lomas is deadly. Do not sleep on Dan Lomas.
Chris has the greatest tweets about Dan Lomas is like scoring like the songs that play after he scores. It's a very touching and tender relationship that you should go back in Twitter and check out. It's pretty awesome. I'm actually going to pick someone from that same team. I think I'm really excited to see Bradley Voigt in a new situation where he can kind of like be himself. You know, I think a lot of times he was pegged as a guy that's like a catch and finish person, but the thing that I love about his game is that he's so creative with how he shoots. His release point and his angles are incredible. And it's funny that I say that because the play that sticks out to me from last year with Dallas, it was a potential game tying shot with almost no time left on the clock, I believe, from a fast break. He was the second or third pass on the break, and he went low to low, and the ball got saved, and Dallas lost. And I don't think about that and talk about that to like make that sound bad. I think that the way that he reacted after that is important, because the way he reacted after that was he was disappointed that he didn't hit the shot. But the next game, he took like 10 shots. Like the mental aspect of being a shooter in professional lacrosse is, and being a shooter at any level when like that's what you do, is wild. Like the actual mental fortitude that you need to get the ball past the goalie, you need to almost never think about it. Right. And that's why I think Voigt's so exciting, because you can tell he doesn't really think about what he's going to do, but the way that he does it is so unique to him that he reminds me of like a more like not inconsistent, but like a different, like a Kevin Lavelle type player. And I think that with this new roster, you know, with Will Sands, who is a completely different player than Bryce Wasserman, and with Michael Kraus, who is also a great passer and finisher, Voigt can like really do damage, especially if the Hammerheads, I still can't believe it's the Hammerheads, can create transition. And I think they can. And I think that's going to be awesome. And I love how he works. I love how he has a great attitude when he plays. And I can't wait to see what he does in this shortened season. Not that is a tournament, but no one's calling it a tournament. All right, let's move on to, let's wrap this all up. We got to do the recommendation of the week. Chris, what is your recommendation of the week?
My recommendation of the week is a culinary recommendation. For those of you who reside anywhere near a Krispy Kreme donut shop, I don't know how far they stretch across these United States and Canada, but if there's a Krispy Kreme by you, I say go there and try their new Mississippi Mud Pie donut for a limited time. So cancel your plans as soon as you're done listening to this podcast and go get one. It's like the glazed donut, but not all glazed. So I guess just the plain donut, and they throw on chocolate pieces, marshmallow drizzle, kind of a little chocolate base on top that it all sits on, and it is fantastic. I got one of them, and one's good enough. It's not like a standard Krispy Kreme where you can eat like a bunch of them. Just get like one, maybe two if you live far away and you can't make it back a lot, and I think you will enjoy it very much.
You know what I love about you, Chris?
What's that?
You make talking about a donut seemed like a profound experience. And it's so positive and so pure that you must be preserved. Like, I almost want to force you to pick something delicious to eat for this recommendation every week for the rest of the month.
I would love to. If I can find some good stuff.
Well, with that in mind, yeah, let's do that. But with that in mind, my recommendation of the week is to go read Chris's piece on the origin story for Wu-Tang's legendary track, Cream, which you have up on your Medium page, correct?
Yes, I do. And you can get there. I pinned the article on my Twitter account, so I'll keep that up there for probably like a week or so. So, yeah, you'll see it up there.
Go check that out. Wu-Tang Forever. Thanks for listening to the Inside the Cross Pro Lacrosse Podcast, MLL edition. Chris, where can people find your Twitter?
Twitter is at ChrisRosie22, and Instagram is at Chris Rosenthal.
You can find me at VKyleDevitt on Twitter and Instagram. And once again, we hope to be doing more and more of these as these tournaments get closer. So make sure you're subscribed to the Inside the Cross podcast feed. Tell a friend. And also, once again, please tell our bosses, Terry Foy and Matt Kinnear, that you want this in your life. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.